You know, every child learns about the Tower of Babel in Bible classes. In Romans chapter 15, verse 4, we have the passage there that reads, the things written before were written for our learning. So, what do we learn? Do we learn what it's like to live after the flood? Or is it that we learn where the different languages come from? Or was it some deeper meanings in this? A lot of times we make this a real rush to get through this, and because our kids learn about the Tower of Babel. But let's turn over to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, beginning in verse 1. It says, now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come now, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is into the heavens. Let's make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over all the face of the earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they began to do. Now, nothing that was proposed to do will be withheld from them. Verse 7 reads, come, let us go down and there refuse their language, and that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building a city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. There's a lot more in these few verses that are for us adults, and not so much for kids. But the kids have learned that story about Babel and all of that long ago. So as we look back to Genesis 11, we need to recall some events that happened there. There were those that were moving east. They were a nomadic people. The tower was likely a ziggurat type of spiral building. And we have to ask the question, why did they build it? Was it to escape another flood? Was it to reach God? Merely to have an unusual structure? Was that what they were talking about? The ziggurat style has a spiral walkway to the top. And that's when our Navy pilots were flying into Iraq a few years back. They flew right over ancient Babylon. And it is just a bunch of broken rocks. And that's what's left of Babylon. There's several prophets that mention different things about that. But God was displeased with them. And so what did he do? He confused their speech. He scattered the people all over the earth. And so the lesson concerns itself with deeper lessons than what we learned when we were children. Man, one thing that man does is that he looks for the greatest, and I think a couple of you made that point this morning in Bible class. These people were indulged in fame and at all cost, and they worked hard to accomplish that to its end. They undertook a stupendous work, all for their own glory. Many in life have set out to make a name for themselves, like those back here in Genesis 11, but few have really, truly succeeded. There is a difference between being successful and having a name or building a name for myself. Consider Simon the Sorcerer. We're all familiar with that case of conversion in Acts chapter 8. Begins about in verse 9 through 11. But Simon, remember, was a sorcerer, a magician, as we might think of it today. And the people recognized him as someone great. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 15. We have there the occasion where God's people were to come there, but God's people were to utterly destroy the Amalekites. And when Samuel heard the bleating of the sheep and the lowing of the oxen, he says, "What is this I hear? What does this suggest to you?" It suggests to me that they had disobeyed God. And that's what Samuel saw as well. Herod, in Acts chapter in Acts chapter 12, verse 23, he was giving a speech, and the people praised him for his narration or whatever he was saying. The people loved it, and they praised Herod for it, and said that it was Herod that had made this great oration, and the people said, "It is a god, and the voice of a god." Still, nothing from the people or from others to condemn the actions that he did. It says that he was eaten by worms. I'm sure that was a very pleasant death to many people. But that's what they thought. They thought it was Herod's speech was something that was unique and it was very desirable. What he contained in that speech, it doesn't tell us, but it does tell us that we have to be humble before God. Who is the greatest was a question that others asked of Jesus in Matthew chapter 16, about verse 13, where Jesus says, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said several choices there. "But who do you say that I am, Peter?" "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Thus, greatness is not accomplished by tooting our own horn, but by building monuments to ourselves. Rather, greatness and true success is accomplished through serving others, not yourself. Few people can handle greatness. When one realizes that the person is often beginning to show or grow, and they grow maybe in excess toward success, and ultimately ended up destroying the individual. Man does not know what is best for himself or others. Have you ever noticed that the poor want to have the things the rich man has, and the rich man wants the things that the poor man has? So it provides itself with the idea of, or concept of, a one world government that is supported strongly by humanist organizations. God doesn't want a worldwide government. He had one, and he destroyed it. He ended it. Man's way often interferes with God's way, and God and the people want to do what they want, not what God wants. Jeremiah 10:23, we quoted this last week, I believe it was. Jeremiah 10:23, O Jehovah, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. Or the other passage that we use oftentimes is in Proverbs 12:15, and also chapter 14, verse 12. There's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. But God has a right to do whatever he wants, to exercise his will, even over my will. And oftentimes people don't take that into account, that God has a permanent way in which to please him, and that is to obey whatever he sets forth. His experience with untold generations. Some of them were successes, others were failures. But God had experience with dealing with man, and knew that man was very corrupt oftentimes and would fall into idolatry. We can see his creative power numerous places in Psalms, especially. One of them is in Psalms 139, and his sovereign control over everything, and his right to question you or I as to where do you have this authority to do what God says do. But still, in all, people do that. God complements their unity. That was one of the good things that God told them about. And we can see what he asked for when he was crowned king. And he came down to view the people. He wasn't very well pleased. He doesn't seem to be impressed at all with the goal or the quality of work that they were doing. They were all working, all right, to build a tower to heaven. But the thing that distinguished them was this project was something that was they were working, they had to work together. There was unity there. And they were trying to build this temple, tower, and the people were doing all of this in unity. They were working for that, to build that tower. But the unique thing about that was that all the people were working with one goal, one aim in mind, and we're building this tower. Have you ever stopped to think of the influence, the talk, the motivation it took to get all of the earth working together in unity? Could we do that in Walker County or just here in Huntsville? People with a common purpose, working diligently toward a common goal, and the power to be is a power to be reckoned with. And the unity of such evil people challenged God. So people with a common purpose, diligent working toward a common goal, was something that they were being successful. The problem was they were being successful in the wrong place. These people were just carried away on a spur of the moment. No, they weren't. This was a project that would require some planning and definitely communication, working together, all of those things. But it was not some kind of a little thing that an idea that someone had just for a few moments. There was a lot of involved. Patience, motivation, determination. It's no wonder that Jesus, in John chapter 17, that's the Lord's Prayer, remember? It's no wonder that Jesus prayed for unity. There, when he prays first for himself, then the apostles, and then for those who would believe on what the apostles wrote. They probably didn't get the idea to everyone at once. Someone says if you have a dream, and then you'd have to sell that dream to others, and sometimes that dream would be sold, sometimes it would not be sold, but this was something that was not pleasing to God. So these people didn't fail to plan, they just planned, and that's as far as they got. They didn't finish the work that they were doing. And that's basically the same plan of evangelism today. We have our problem, basically, is the problem of planning. When you plan and then work your plan with others, that's how you can blends all that together. And the Bible gives us many goals to reach for. Goals, first of all, have to be achievable. God's message is, you can do it. When God says and gives us a command to do, we can do it. It's not stated in so many words, but the plan is there. The workers are there. All of the things that would be necessary for a big project, even in today's standards. And so we have to be careful about our planning, make sure that we continue to plan, but that the plan also is acceptable to God. Paul says basically the same thing in Philippians chapter 3, beginning in verse 7. Excuse me. How did Saul, or the Apostle Paul, how was he turned from being a super Jew to a humble Christian? I think probably we might see that what Paul did, and the reason that he did what he did, was he wanted the prize, the goal. And so his sight was so fixed on that goal that he humbled himself and could not be shaken away from God's way. His sight was so fixed on the goal that he was not to be shaken in any way. So when you're going down someplace, and I learned this in West Virginia years ago, held a meeting there, and they said, they pointed out someone going to invite you for supper tonight or something, and he said, well, you go down here two C's, and then turn left there, and go one and a half C, And you know what? It worked. But he had to explain to me a little further. When you see as far as you can see, it's what they were talking about. And then go there, and then another see beyond that, and then turn. And but that was their way of course, they had a lot of ups and downs in their hills and mountains too. But they, their system worked so far as giving directions and having some kind of a sense to do those things. I've heard of other cases where people use different things other than going a certain number of miles or what have you. But we can all strive to do what God says, to obey Him, no matter what. And this morning, if there are those here who may be subject to the gospel in any way, feel free to come and we'll assist you in whatever way we can.